And they had people that had either the escalator going up on the right-hand side, or you could take the stairs, and each stair played a different key on the piano. So more people took the stairs than they did the escalators because it was more fun. So they did something they hadn't done before that was better for them. So it all wraps up beautifully. It was such a fun campaign. And again, didn't have to cost a lot of money. You know, they didn't do many of those piano stairs. And it's that old thing, well, the new thing that we try and do now is experienced by few, seen by many. So you see it all the time. You know, you do one small little activation that really doesn't have to cost a lot of money, but you film it beautifully, you put a good track to it, you make sure it gets shared correctly, and all of a sudden you've got a hit.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the second part of my conversation with Darren Barino.
Just going into where you've lived, so you've lived in South Africa now and you're in New York. Have you lived elsewhere?
I sure have.
In those two places? Yeah.
I sure have. So in 2008, I originally had a job leaving Johannesburg to come straight to New York. Then the financial recession hit and I packed everything up, sold the house, sold the car. So I said to my head aunt, well, you're sending me somewhere. So she sent me to Prague in the Czech Republic.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I didn't think I'd be going to Eastern Europe, but it was a lot of fun. I did a lot of flying in and out of London, handling a lot of Unilever work there. So that was good. That's kind of where I learned a lot of the strategic work, which was good. And then after that, I went to Sydney, Australia for 5 years at Saatchi and Saatchi there, which was interesting, helping to run Toyota. And I was running one of the bigger banks there creatively. Also, was creative director of Greenpeace for a year. So that was really interesting. And then after that, went back to South Africa for 2 years, was helping to run a TBWA agency there that went exceptionally well. And I used that to transfer to TBWA here in New York, but it was still up on Madison Avenue, Shiat Day.
Yeah. Well, my point in asking that was that the advertising market in each of those markets must be very different. So I'm just wondering what those differences might be, because I know that Australia is different from New York, different from Eastern Europe, different from South Africa.
Yeah.
So what are some of those differences? And now that you're in New York, I mean, that you're, I guess, getting the benefit of understanding all of those differences and putting them to work now where you are.
Yep. You are 100% right. It is very different. And I'll tell you a strange thing as I kind of braced myself for a little bit of a culture shock going to the Czech Republic, but it was fine. But the biggest culture shock I got was actually coming to New York. And one of the, you know, although I'm South African, my parents are British. So I was brought up on British comedy, like quite sarcastic, quite dry, quite undertoned. And coming to the States and having to write like a fair amount of comedy commercials, I would often take the joke to a point. Like, I'll give you an example. Let's say we're going to say that there is a man getting onto a bus, right? And he's a big guy and he gets on the bus and then the tires burst, right? So the British sense of humor would go, oh, the tires burst because he's overweight. So you leave it. You don't quite close that loop and everyone laughs. But here in the States, you need to close that loop. You say he got onto the bus, the tires burst because he's so fat. And then you get to the punchline or whatever your commercial is, right? So I've had to learn how to close that loop a little further. You see it in stand-up comedy too. Like not too many of the sort of European stand-up comics will raise their voice at the end of a joke. But then you get to the States, you look at a Kevin Hart, he shouts the punchline. He'll go, oh my God, you won't believe it. And then that's the cue to the audience to laugh. They're like, oh, the joke is done. There's the piece. But I find in the European stuff, it kind of leaves it a little more open-ended. So in terms of writing campaigns, I've had to learn to land it just a little harder here to make sure that it's landed. I think also part of that is that the market share is way bigger. I think it's about 5 or 6 times bigger than South Africa. It is huge. So people are receiving a lot more messages all the time. So if you leave it open, it will probably get missed. So you do need to land it just a little bit harder and close those loops a little more clearly.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. And here in Canada, we have that understated British humor.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little more blue collar, I think.
Yeah.
That kind of takes it down just a slight level.
Mm-hmm. I think
yeah.
You're right.
So, yeah, every market is different, I'm sure. Yeah. And speaking of that, is there a particular campaign that you've come across that you wish you'd written?
Oh, there definitely is, and it does use sound. So, it's called the Climate Name Change Project, and it's by an incredible agency by Barton F. Graf. And you know, every single year we hear about a new hurricane or a tornado or something that goes through and decimates cities, right? And we call it Katrina or whatever we want to call it, right? People's random names. But what this campaign did very cleverly was they would name those hurricanes after the politicians that were climate deniers.
Since 1954, the World Meteorological Organization has been naming hurricanes and tropical storms. But what did these people do to deserve having their names attached to this? As climate change continues to create more frequent and devastating storms, we propose a new naming system. One that names extreme storms after policymakers who deny climate change. We propose something like this.
Senator Marco Rubio is expected to pound the eastern seaboard sometime early tonight.
Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann is incredibly dangerous. If you value your life, please seek shelter from Michelle Bachmann.
David Bitterman is literally lifting boats out of the water and tossing them onto the land.
Local animal shelters are under pressure as thousands of animals have been displaced or killed by Governor Rick Perry.
And you're like, oh, that is so interesting. And it doesn't cost anything to do that. It takes a lot of alignment. And all of a sudden, it's on every single news headline, every clickbait piece of BuzzFeed you get, on every report that you see that this politician has destroyed this piece of land or this people's lives or these floods or whatever's happened. And I thought that was just such a clever way, by using the name or the sound that we might refer to someone, to make them feel like they have to take responsibility for their decisions. And I thought that was so simple and really so powerful.
Yeah, that is a really interesting campaign. And how long ago was that? Or was that recent?
That was 2014.
Okay. So a little while ago. Yeah. Probably a lot more names on that list now.
It might be time to bring it back.
Yeah. Oh, are they?
Absolutely. Yeah. We could probably have multiple names. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they should. Yeah. There are so many interesting ways of using sound to persuade. And I know that, you know, we've talked about things. I actually, on this podcast, in a solo episode, I believe, I mentioned the Volkswagen musical Stairs that we were going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just fascinating. How do you persuade people to do something with sound? And that was brilliant. It happened to be sponsored by Volkswagen. I couldn't even remember who sponsored it, but they were just trying to get people to exercise more. And so they put sounds on the stairs and then had people go up the stairs and understand that they could then make a tune if they wanted to by going up and down the stairs.
Absolutely.
Just fascinating.
It is. That was such a smart campaign, and it did really well at all the award shows. So I think almost any good creative person will know about it. So they called it the VW, the fun theory.
Mm-hmm.
And the bigger idea for it was for the VW Blue Motion. That's the name of their car, right? This was in 2009. And they wanted to make it clear that if you want to get people to do something that they've never done before, you need to make it fun. Hence, this VW Blue Motion car, which is eco-friendly, is a lot more fun. There's cool stuff inside of it. There's like little holders and a whole different color schemes you could pick and stuff. So it was kind of, again, it like delivered the strategy without it being too obvious what they were doing. And they had people that had either the escalator going up on the right-hand side, or you could take the stairs, and each stair played a different key on the piano. So more people took the stairs than they did the escalators because it was more fun. So they did something they hadn't done before that was better for them. So it all wrapped up beautifully. It was such a fun campaign. And again, didn't have to cost a lot of money. You know, they didn't do many of those piano stairs. And it's that old thing, well, the new thing that we try and do now is experienced by few, seen by many.
Yeah.
So you see it all the time. You know, you do one small little activation that really doesn't have to cost a lot of money, but you film it beautifully. You put a good track to it. You make sure it gets shared correctly. And all of a sudden you've got a hit.
Yeah. Social media does a lot of that for you.
Very much so.
Yeah. Pretty interesting. There are other instances of this too, though. Can you maybe mention some others that you're familiar with?
Yeah. So there's this interesting thing that they did in France, actually. So it's kind of persuading people. It's kind of less of advertising. But, you know, I hear it all the time in New York, and I was worried it would happen today, is that, you know, whenever you hear an ambulance or a fire truck or a police vehicle go by, it is so loud. You could hear it from 20 or 30 blocks away. It is so loud. But what they did in France was they actually had the ambulance siren, but it was directional. So it didn't make, they didn't go louder. They were able to point it in front of them, and just the people in front of them would hear it. So the people, you know, trying to sleep on a Sunday morning on either side didn't have to listen to it. And I thought it was such a clever way to sort of consider everyone, but still amplify what they were trying to do.
Yeah, very interesting.
Do you want to sound your absolute best when you're being interviewed on a podcast or when you're hosting your own show? I have a podcast episode and free downloadable worksheet called Sounding Your Best as a Podcast Guest off of the audiobrandingpodcast.com main page. Just click on the little square graphic to the left of the player displaying my podcast trailer. It gives you some comprehensive suggestions for where to start or for improving the sound you already have, including the type of microphones to consider and why, ideas for soundproofing your recording environment, and suggestions on how to get the best sound when you're being remotely recorded on services like Riverside FM or Squadcast. Don't let bad audio quality hold you back from being the best podcast guest or host you can be. And of course, if you happen to need voiceover for your intro and outro, feel free to get in touch. I'm happy to help. And now, back to the podcast.
Yeah, and Denmark's Road, again, and I had heard of this before you mentioned it to me, that it will play a sound on when you drive over it if you're at the speed limit.
100%, yeah. They called it that. Asphaltophone. And if you went exactly the speed limit, the sound that it made, the rhythm, the song that it made was really pleasing. But if you went too fast, it became annoying. And, you know, we've all had kids in the car before. Everybody wants to slow down and pay and just enjoy it. And there's no reason to race. So you may as well just enjoy the track. It also adds to the feeling of that road trip feeling that they had, and kind of got people to just abide by the law in a fun way.
Yeah, it's interesting because all of these are to persuade people to do things that they may not otherwise do, right? So, yeah, I'm blown away by the engineering that must have taken, actually figuring out what speed you have to drive over this piece of pavement and what, you know, ridges you need to create.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I almost wonder if they did too much of a campaign around it. You know, usually we'll do something cool like that, and then you have to spend a lot of money telling people how it works, what to do. But I'm pretty sure if you're on the road and you feel those ridges, you're going to work it out by yourself pretty quickly.
It's true. Yeah. There's so many interesting ways to use this kind of thing.
Such a great thing.
How about with your own team? When you're working on something, how do you come up with a creative idea? You mentioned that sometimes you come up with the sound first, and being open to creative ideas must be really interesting with obviously many people in the room. Is there a place that you start usually when it comes to the sensibilities of a company? When you're building something for a brand, do a lot of them already have an audio brand? Are you building that audio brand for them, or how does it generally work?
So sometimes the most difficult thing is when a client thinks they know what they need to fix the problem, right? And I think that's fine. We'll obviously throw that into the mix, but like, it's kind of like going to the plumber and telling him exactly how to put all the pipes in for your toilet. You're like, no, I just want this to happen. Do it for me, right? Which is fine. And sometimes brands come with audio things that they like and they don't like or whatever that is. But, you know, I think that the best thing you can do is be completely malleable. So spend the first few days really immersing yourself in the client's brand, understanding the problem. All too often, we jump straight into a cool ad, right? So someone wants to do something for dog food. We wanted to shoot 1,000 dogs. You're like, wait, why are we doing this? What is the real problem? What's the strategy? What do we want to do? Because the worst thing you want to do with a client, especially if it's a smaller client, I personally prefer working on challenger brands. I like to work with small brands that want to take on the big guys. And a sort of inexperienced creative team might take that brand and say, okay, we're going to do this cool thing, whatever. And then that's going to reposition the brand in the market. But if you don't have a full perspective of where everything is, you could accidentally position that brand right next to their competitor that will easily outspend them. So you have to be very careful what you're doing and really think it through. And I don't think too many creatives take the time to understand the full landscape, the strategy. Because once you do all the grown-up stuff and all the boring framework and you've dug through all the data and you understand what the problem is and you can put it into a simple sentence and you know that's going to serve the brand properly, that's the time to start coming up with crazy ideas that will deliver on that. And there's this interesting thing, you know, you might sit on day one or two in an office around with the team and everyone's, like I say, white knuckling it. Everyone's trying to crack this thing and get the idea to work. But I can guarantee you 9 times out of 10, it's when you're cycling home or when you're washing your dog at home or you're out with a friend having coffee, you'll see something happen. You'll go, wait a minute, that's smart. The way that woman spoke to her dog is exactly what we need to be doing for this brand. Let's record that audio sound. I'm writing notes on my phone all the time, picking little snippets of things, taking photographs of signs, because I know at some point this weird stew in my mind, I'll be able to pull out campaign ideas from it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's being creative can be a curse.
It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. I mean, my fiance laughs at me. I wake up at 4 a.m. and stop putting things on my phone. I just have an idea in my head and I put it, like, it just doesn't stop. It's a 24-hour job. Luckily, I enjoy it, which is a good thing, but these ideas come to you at any time. And they very rarely come to you when you're sitting in front of a desk with a piece of paper trying to crack it. That's not when it happens. You know, New York is wonderful for that. The amount of weird stuff you can see every single day and be inspired is just, it's what I love most about the city. I spend my time walking around this city 4 or 5 hours sometimes, just putting stuff, people probably think I'm crazy.
Well, I mean, that's part of the job, I would imagine.
That's right.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. I'm sure they appreciate the creativity that comes with all of this. Yeah, there's a lot. But you've been doing this, like you said, 23 years, is that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So somewhere around there.
Yeah. So what have you seen change from the beginning to now, as far as advertising is concerned?
Sure.
I'm sure a lot.
I mean, a lot's changed. I mean, there's good and bad. So on the bad side, I would say that the speed at which we have to come up with campaigns now is really different. You know, the first brief I ever worked on at TBWA Huntless Chorus in Johannesburg, very famous agency, very good agency. I had 6 weeks to come up with one print ad for a BMW for the 3 Series coming out. Now, granted, we had a wall and we had to fill that wall with paper every single day of 50 different ways to come up with it, right? And we did that every day for 6 weeks. But when you make that piece of work at the end of it, it's perfect for the brand. It will win an award. It's beautifully shot. You know, it's incredible, which is good because you really had time to stick it on the wall, go home, come back, tear it all down, keep one of them, build on that one. So you really had time to work through the process and sort of really immerse yourself in the brand. And now these days, you get sort of 2 days to do a full 360 campaign, which is what we call. It's where you have the sort of brand in the middle and a platform, and you have 50 or 60 different touch points. So what is the social stuff? What's the TV, the radio? How are we going to make it work in digital? And it just expands and expands and expands. And the problem with that is that you get a lot of surface level thinking. You can only go so deep with the time that you have. And I think that's why you see commercials generally these days are, it's either got a pun in the headline or it's borrowed interest. And by that, I mean, like you throw a celebrity in there, or it's got a big track, or it's got a new like visual effect or something like that. It's not really deep thinking that's going to build a brand over time. So I think that's definitely one of the bad things that I would say, I would like to change if there was any way to do that. But yeah, on the plus side,
I guess the
side,
tools have gotten better though, right?
It's exactly where I was going to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
The tools now are incredible. I mean, I'm using AI in terms of image generation, in terms of ideation too. You know, there's only so far that the computer in my skull can take me. I can think of 30 great ideas. Now with AI, I can push it. I can do 300 great ideas. Now I need to be skilled enough to know out of those 300, which ones are good, because AI makes usually bad ideas. So that's kind of one thing you got to be very careful of. And then the other thing is I never want to use AI for anything that goes out into the real world. That's one of the rules I've got, is I like to keep it within the agency. So if you want to use it to express an idea in your head, and we use Midjourney to create a visual for that, to put it up or to help client understand what we think, I think that's great. But I don't ever want it to use it as the final piece that goes out, right? We need to hire photographers, we need to get illustrators, voiceover artists, someone to score a beautiful track for you, whatever it is you need, because that is where the happy little accidents come in, right? Where you might have someone doing a voiceover and they might find something funny and have an actual genuine laugh during the voiceover read. And I'm like, let's keep that in. That's human. That's real. That's why we connect. And I think you touched on it earlier where you said, I think we're heading into a place now where the humanity is going to become more important than ever before, right? The internet is about to be flooded with AI content, 110%. Mm-hmm. And the more sort of authentic, authenticity is something we've heard in marketing for the past sort of 5 or 6 years, where everyone's really saying it needs to be authentic and to be able to connect with it in a real way. I want to feel like it's human. I think that's going to become even more important, because when you look at podcasts like the Joe Rogan podcast, don't always agree with what he's saying, but the fact that they're sitting and talking for 2 or 3 hours means that it's a real conversation. It's not completely performed, or it hasn't been sort of engineered so much that it feels clinical. It's a real conversation. I think people are craving that now, and I think in the future they're going to be craving it a lot more.
Yeah, like the one we're having right now.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about AI, but of course you just went there, so we don't need to do that now.
Yeah, it's wildly exciting. I mean, obviously we need to do it safely, but I think I think there'll be more good than bad.
Yeah, I've said this a lot. I think it's great for productivity and not great for connectivity. So productivity in the way that it gives you ideas, it gives you things to play off of, it helps you visualize things, that kind of thing is great. And there are all sorts of tools to make audio sound better. There are all sorts of interesting ways to do mm-hmm. that. But when you're putting out the final product, you can tell if it's not made by humans. There's
very, very quickly.
Yeah. There's no lived experience behind it. That's part of what voiceover, like I have to think of this as a voice artist. If I could be replaced by AI really easily, you know, well, then there goes my living, right? but when it comes down to it, my lived experience is how I am on a commercial spot as the voiceover. And whatever my experience is supposed to have been in that context, my lived experience is still behind everything that I speak. So
absolutely,
you know, there's a real human there. And again, when you're mm-hmm. making art of any kind, if you're talking to AI, sure, use AI. But if you're talking to a human, you want the humanity in there. Yeah, it's I think that there will be a lot of people who just want to press a button.
Hi there, I'm Karsten Kims, CEO and founder of Sunny Minds, and you're listening to the Audio Branding Podcast, a great place to learn about how powerful sound can be. If you want to understand how to harness the power in your own life, keep listening.
I have a feeling that in the next sort of, I don't know, three, 2 to 5 years, everyone's going to go crazy on it, and it's going to be awesome for them, and they think it's super easy. Why do I need to build a campaign using real people? And I think it's going to swing back pretty quickly. I mean, as I keep saying, the subconscious mind, right? You know, when you meet somebody, it goes back to your prehistoric mind. Is this person a threat? Are they confident? Is their voice shaky? Is their cadence good? Can I trust them? Plus, probably thousands of other cues that we haven't even worked out yet in terms of medicine that we read from when you're listening to someone or you're seeing someone or how they're moving. And I think all of those things are imperative when you're trying to get somebody to trust a brand. A brand is really like an intangible thing. So we only have so many tools to get people to really trust it and to buy into it. So I don't know why you'd strip any of those out to save a couple of bucks. I think you're going to find that you're going to be eroding the brand and breaking a lot of loyalty. And I think it's going to take a long time to build that back up.
Yeah, it's so true. I think if people use AI in the final version and people, and they don't tell people, and then they find it out later, people feel betrayed. They feel like you lied to them. You know, that's not a good look for a brand.
Oh yeah, it's not a good look at all. And I feel like humans are far more intuitive than we're even aware of. I think that you can feel it straight away. I mean, I'm really paying attention to the cutting edge product tools that are coming out. And I think that maybe you weren't paying attention, it might fool you, something like that. But I think if you really do want to connect to a brand, I think it needs to be a real person, because you read signals and cues out of that that we're not even aware of.
Yeah, so true. Yeah. So is there anything that you would like to tell people who are getting into advertising or working in the creative marketing end of things? What should they know now?
Yeah, I think, so this is something I kind of got lucky with in the beginning. You know, a lot of young creatives will go, oh, this agency is doing super well, let me just go and work there and everything's going to be great. What I would say is, don't be attracted by the name on the door. Find one person that has done well within that agency or their career and is open to mentoring you. It's something I don't teach you much in the US. I think it's so hard to keep your own head above water. I don't see that many creative leaders bringing people up under them and teaching and nurturing and passing those skills down. You know, and since COVID, we've all got remote work, which is great, but I can't imagine being a junior and only learning through a screen, watching people where they're very sort of poised in a meeting. That's not really where you get to see what really happens behind the scenes. I remember when I was working at Hunt Lascaris, my first month, there was a huge pitch for a major brand. And I watched the chief creative officer go in there and, you know, we're all terrified. He's presenting to this big client and it went exceptionally badly. It went really bad. They had absolutely missed the mark. And I remember sitting in that boardroom going, we're probably going to sell the building. Everyone's probably going to get executed outside. Like, there's no way anyone's going to survive this. This is terrible. And as we walked out, he literally said, like, that's okay, we'll get the next one, and patted me on the back. I was like, but so no one dies? This is fine? He goes, yeah, it's part of the business.
No one dies. Sometimes we get it right.
Sometimes we do, yeah. And it really gave me the freedom, because I was white-knuckling it. I was going, everything needs to be perfect and right. He's like, it's fine. People change their minds. This is a subjective thing we do. Sometimes you don't always get it right. And that gave me the confidence to make mistakes and move forward. So, and I wouldn't have had that had I just picked the name on the agency door, right? I found a person, his name's Damon Stapleton. He's one of the best creatives in the world. He's in New Zealand now. And he just made me feel comfortable enough to go, hey, none of this is super serious. Like, if you relax a little bit, and you can have a little bit more fun with it. Like, of course, yes, it's serious and there's a lot of business and we need to get it right. But don't think about it that way. Just have the confidence to go in there and play a little bit and feel good. But that wouldn't have happened had I not found the right person to bring me under their wing and teach me all the right things and tell me what to worry about and what not to worry about.
Yeah, so true. And as you say, no one dies.
No one dies. We're not solving cancer in babies here. We make visual riddles for a living. Mm-hmm. We throw puns around in radio ads. It's fine. You can have fun with it. And I think a lot of the fun has been taken out of it because there's so much pressure, and especially in the advertising market, a lot of the holding companies are shrinking rapidly. Clients' budgets are shrinking. So there's a lot of pressure on everything.
And they have to much more with that budget too. Like, so absolutely. Many more videos and such made for social media and all sorts of different markets that need to be taken care of. Like, it's, you know, I understand the 6 weeks for the big wall of photos was fantastic when there was just television, radio, and print magazines.
But that was it, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot more going on now.
Those days are gone.
Yes,
that's for sure.
Yes, they are. Well, speaking of those days, what are you working on now that you could talk about?
Sure. So the latest client we've got at Inkfish, it's called Prometheus.ai, and it's really interesting. So I'm sure you've been on a website before where you have an annoying little chatbot in the corner, and whatever you ask it a question, it can't really help you. And it's super friendly and helpful, and it's kind of useless. So what Prometheus does is they take the power of large language models, all the understanding of AI, and it becomes a sort of a digital human, is what we're calling it, or a digital persona on the website. But how it's different is it obviously has understands everything of the brand and all the products. But what this one does, it brings in a third dimension. It helps you understand yourself a little bit more as a consumer. So it's got emotional intelligence built into it. So if you're going to buy a pair of sneakers, it might not just say, hey, what color do you want? It'll say, hey, is this for running, or is there something bigger you want to do, or you're trying to look good in this place or that place? So it asks you a few questions first to help you understand why you're making this purchase. And the closest we've got to sort of explaining it, we're still in the process, is imagine if you go to Nike and you have a salesman and he tries to sell you the most expensive sneaker and you feel like maybe it's not what you need, but you buy it anyway and you leave with that certain feeling. Now imagine if you go to Nike with Prometheus.ai, but your uncle works there and he goes, hey, I know you think you want these most expensive ones, but I know you're thinking about running. You're probably not going to go running. Let me give you these cheaper ones till you get into it. We've got three colors. Here's a coupon. Come back to us next week. I'll see if there's another size for you. So it's kind of that feeling more. It's just it takes the power from the brand a little bit and helps put it back onto the consumer. So the consumer can feel like, oh, I'm being understood, I'm being seen, I'm making the right decisions for me. I'm still buying something, but I don't feel like I'm being gouged or tricked into anything. So that's kind of what we're doing. And the audio part of that is really important. We're trying not to have it where you type it all. It'll be a voice that talks to you and you're able to pick from a few different voices.
Really?
And
interesting.
Each brand
okay.
will have a different persona. Mm-hmm. Each brand will have a different look. So the digital human that is on a banking site would look different to one that is on Nike or on like a different like car brand or whatever it is. And we'd be right for that brand, but it's not meant to be a like a business card for the brand. It's meant to be whatever is going to be emotionally intelligent enough for the consumer to feel connected to. And then that's how you truly build loyalty, right? We've seen it before with banks. How many times you walk past a big billboard for a bank, it says, we're the bank you can trust. And we kind of know that's not true. And now that you've said that, I definitely don't trust you. And trust is built over time, right? Over many different interactions. So if you go to the website and every single time the brand is putting my needs first and not their needs first, then all of a sudden after 10 interactions, I'm like, okay, in the back of my head, I do trust you. You've built a relationship with me. And now I have that true trust feeling, which is something that marketing really, really can do, is get a human to trust a brand. So this is that link that I think it's going to be very important going forward.
That sounds fascinating. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. And how can people get in touch with you if they'd like to do that, if they want to work with you?
Yeah, drop me an email, darren@inkfishnyc.com. So darren at inkfishnyc.com.
And that's the URL of your website too, right? Inkfish.
That's right.
NYC.com. Yeah.
That's the one.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Darren. This has been really educational and fun. I appreciate you being here and what you're doing for your clients. I'm sure they're very happy with your work because it sounds like you're enormously creative and having a good time with it, which is really a good point too.
I feel so grateful to have a career where I can, you know, put my weird brain to work and help other people build value for their businesses.
That's great. Well, thanks so much.
Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.